I forget exactly what my title was, but hopefully you all saw the abstract and sort of know what I'm going to talk about. So the main thing I'm going to discuss, it starts with a story. I should really know all of the authors in this paper, but I somehow always forget the full list and I don't want to start naming more, but the first one is Beam. Anyway, but these papers are pretty well known by now, and the main idea is that if you have a four-dimensional n equals two superconformal field theory, on, let's say, R2 times a curve C, algebraic curve, then from this data, there's a way of constructing a chiral algebra or a vertex algebra over the curve C. And it's some kind of like localization type procedure, which I think sort of previously, sort of originally was understood in kind of a funny way. And it's with respect to superconformal symmetry, I'm not going to talk too much about this perspective, but this was kind of the original idea. And then, there's lots of interesting 4D n equals 2 SCFTs. Some are gauge theories, like SU2, NF equals 4. Some are these class S theories that everybody introduced. And so all of these give rise to some cool chiral algebras. So there was kind of an update in this story. And I think, it really goes back to this paper of Kevin and Davide on 3D n equals 4 vertex algebras. I sort of also plan to kind of write something about it myself. And then there's also a really nice paper of Jiwon Oh and Junya Yagi about this topic. And there's also a paper by someone named Saibyuk Jung. Do you know how to spell his surname, though? Shoot, I should have looked it up. Do you know how to spell Saibyuk's surname? All right, I'm going to guess. This is so embarrassing. I'm sorry. Anyway. But something like this, he's a student, I think he's at Rutgers now, and he's a really cool guy too. So these people, whatever, sort of realize that there's a way of thinking about this in terms of this construction called the omega background. So I'm gonna just quickly draw a kind of picture of what's going on. So the idea is that you should think of, roughly speaking, you should think of your R2 as this kind of cigar, and then you have your curve C, which we're thinking of the factorization algebra or the chiral algebra as living over. And first, let me just describe something super naive you can do. You can just restrict to the operators that live at this point. And that certainly gives you some algebra of operators living along this curve, which that's a perfectly well-defined operation. And that operation, unfortunately, will typically give you something that looks sort of commutative. Basically, because you have these extra directions, and if you try to compute OPEs, you can kind of move things around each other. Mathematically, there's a kind of Ekman-Hilton argument. But it's worth mentioning that you can also think of this procedure in a couple of steps. So first, you can reduce on the kind of circle of this cigar and produce a field theory on the kind of half line times this Riemann surface. And there's a canonical boundary condition induced here from the tip of this cigar. And you can take the sort of boundary theory with respect to this, boundary theory at zero, and that sort of canonically just does the same thing. So what's the omega background? So there's kind of an enhancement of this procedure where you turn on a kind of rotational equivariance along this circle. And by turning it on, it deforms. This gives a deformation of the chiral algebra. So there's some kind of chiral algebra living here. So let me call this omega deformation now. And this gives a kind of a deformation from a commutative to a non-commutative chiral algebra. And so this, of course, this was first introduced by Nekrasov. But he studied it in a kind of A-type twist situation, but there was also some work of Junya Yagi, which kind of introduced it in the B-type Rozensky-Witten theory. And it's actually the B-type that applies to this particular situation, but I'm not going to focus on the kind of details of the twists. So how can you understand this omega deformation? Well, one way you can understand it is by saying, really, there's a notion of equivariant reduction. And so rather than just reducing on this circle, you can kind of reduce S1 equivariantly on this circle. And the resulting field theory, it kind of gives you a family over the S1 equivariant cohomology of a point. And I have some kind of forthcoming paper about sort of equivariant factorization homology and equivariant localization, which I've kind of talked about those ideas a lot here, and I don't want to talk about them today, but it kind of explains this. There'll also be a kind of more physics-y paper doing some calculations. Those should appear in the next, I don't know, sort of several months, but I've been saying that for a while. But the point is, then you can compute this boundary theory for this family of field theories over the S1 equivariant cohomology, and that gives you this deformation from the kind of commutative to the quantum chiral algebra here. So that's sort of the basic picture of how this should go. I think that's everything I wanted to say for now. Great. So today I really want to focus. I've kind of explained a lot of things related to this story in the gauge theory setting, but today I want to focus on this kind of class S setting. So let's talk about class S. So the basic idea here is to start with the six-dimensional n equals 2,0 SCFT. It's labeled by, let's see, kind of Lie algebra for simplicity G. And it's going to start on some, so it's going to be six-dimensional. So now it's going to be on some curve, possibly with some decoration. I'm going to allow myself to mark some points. So this, I'm drawing P1, and I'm drawing three marked points just for concreteness. And then I'm going to draw the rest of the remaining four dimensions in keeping with that picture, but really it could be anything. So I'm going to put it on a cigar, a Riemann surface. And the main sort of first idea is that you can just reduce on this kind of curve. So let me give these guys names. So this is sigma, and I'll call its decoration kind of D. I'll say more about the decorations in a bit. This is again R2, this is C. So you can reduce along sigma and D. And as long as you kind of chose good decorations and a closed curve, this should produce Fortean equals 2 theory on the remaining, you know, cigar times this guy. And then we'll be back in this kind of setting that we started with over here. So here, maybe I'll just label these. So this was 4D n equals 2. The relevant theories in 3D are 3D n equals 4. And the deformation is really from the holomorphic to the A twist, just for completeness. That's sort of what's going on here. So the main sort of perspective I want to emphasize today is that in this class S case, there's a kind of a trick to analyzing this, and this is going to sort of ultimately lead to a computation of these class S chiral algebras, which is I could first just reduce along the circles in sigma and get some interval with some boundary conditions determined from these kind of tips, and maybe some defects determined by anything funny that's going on in kind of the middle of the curve, and it's going to be times the same thing, and then I could reduce on the interval sort of after that. And of course, this sort of manifestly commutes. And the relevant theory here is kind of 5D n equals 2. Can people still see up there? Is that OK? Great. So now I'm going to just run this same game in this setting. So what would I have done here? I could have, you know, reduced on this S1 now of the cigar and got my 3D theory with boundary condition. And then I could have passed to the kind of boundary theory here, 3D n equals 4. And my class S, I would find the class S chiral algebras. So these were studied, by the way. These were studied in by the same or possibly with some new collaborators as the original collaboration there. And there were a whole bunch of conjectures about their expected properties, but the reason it was maybe hard, let me say from this perspective, is that these 4DN equals 2 theories, sort of, let me call them S of sigma and D, and the reductions to 3DN equals 4 theories, they're kind of hard to understand. There are some predictions about their Coulomb branches of these 3DN equals 4 theories matching some moduli spaces of meromorphic connections, but the Higgs branches, which are usually the kind of principal objects that allow you to sort of study these 3DN equals 4 theories, they're kind of difficult to pin down, and they're what people now call these Moore-Tachikawa varieties. And I'll say more about that in a second. But the upshot, the sort of main idea that I'm going to present today, is that there's a lift of this whole situation coming from this side where, you know, now we could reduce along this circle and we'd find a setup like the following. And here we would find a 4DN equals 4 theory, because we reduced on two circles, with a bunch of boundary conditions and possibly some defects coming from the data of the curve. We could then compute the boundary theory at the bottom, and then at any stage of this procedure, we can always kind of compactify in this direction along the interval as well to produce the kind of relevant guys here. It turns out that the field theory at this boundary here is Trin-Simons theory, and as I'll explain, basically this perspective on the calculation gives a construction which was carried out by Arakawa in the mathematical context, which really produced these class S chiral algebras. So there were a whole bunch of conjectures like, oh, there should be these vertex algebras with all these properties, and Arakawa kind of went ahead and constructed them, and I'm going to kind of explain a perspective on his construction from kind of this history. So before I do that, I just want to orient you a bit to kind of the expectations that came out of this sort of picture a little bit more mathematically, and maybe also explain this kind of Moore-Tachikawa perspective. So there's this kind of general fact, which I don't know, it's too bad no one's here who would tell me who to attribute this to, but there's this general fact that, which I'll give a physics explanation for in a second, that factorization homology defines a TFT valued in Morita categories. What's that? Is it in Lurie's paper on TFTs? Yeah, and I know a lot of things are kind of sketched there. I think also maybe Claudia Scheinbauer did a bunch of work related to this in her thesis. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Sorry, what's that?
Claudia's the one who actually proved.
Claudia's the one who, yeah, so that's probably the, ooh, another name I'm gonna struggle to spell. Anyone wanna help me out? IEM?
EIM.
I have like self-diagnosed, late onset dyslexia, so that's my excuse for kind of not knowing how to spell various things. Okay, in Morita categories. So what does this mean? This sounds like a lot of kind of fancy words, whatever, but the basic idea from physics is like, you know, if you reduce on a manifold with boundary, you know, reducing on the manifold brings you down more dimensions than reducing on the boundary. And so you find like a sort of bulk theory coming from the reducing on the boundary, and you find a boundary theory for it coming from reducing on the bulk of the picture. So I'll sort of explain it maybe concretely in an example. So from the 6D theory, if there were a 6D theory and like we had some kind of factorization algebra for it, we'd have the following expectation. There'd be some TFT, let me kind of, for comparison, call it like a Gyodo-Witten or something. And you know, these people basically sort of did all of the foundational work that I'm going to use in these constructions. So it should assign to S1 basically the 5D n equals 2 theory. And And for me, like, you know, one way you might think about that, that I would like to think about that, is that this should be something like an E1 algebra or an associative algebra object in factorization algebras on some algebraic surface or four manifold, which is like the remaining dimensions. So this is like the 5D n equals 2 theory on the remaining, you know, R times whatever your four manifold is. And then if you had, you know, some Riemann surface, possibly with some decorations, some topology, you would expect this. So I mean, if it were just a higher dimensional manifold, the type of thing you'd expect to get, let's say it was closed, then of course this should assign the 4D n equals 2 S of sigma D, which you should think of as being maybe described by something like a factorization algebra on this algebraic surface. But if this guy had boundary, you'd expect to find a kind of boundary condition for this 5D n equals 2. And this would be in, rather than just being in this, it would be in sort of Z GW of S1 modules internal to this category of factorization algebras. Which like topological twists in 6D. So I think you could probably try to make sense of this in either case. But for me, for the situation that's relevant here, I'm going to choose the twist where the curve that remains at the end of the day, which in particular is sort of in my surface in this picture, is the holomorphic direction. So this is a truly topological in the directions we're reducing the 6D.
So there's still a factorizational homology, right? You say TFT. Mm-hmm. Why TFT? I mean.
So this, for this theorem to be true, this is sort of like topological.
Yeah.
And that's really the way this theorem is proved. It's not like Bielen and Drinfeld style. It's kind of like Ayala Francis Lurie style.
So the S you're using, is that just a topological surface underlying
the
curve C, or is it?
S is, no, sorry, so S here, I was being very, so S, algebraic surface, which for our examples, it will be equal to sort of C times our curve C.
Oh.
So I'm thinking of this, sorry, this is like what is supposed to come from the 6D theory. Mm-hmm. So reducing on a circle should assign a 5D theory, which you could think of as, you know, an algebra object in factorization algebras on this surface. And if you reduce on this sort of guy with a boundary, you should get some kind of module object for it again, algebra on the surface. Great. So it's unfortunate that I have to go over here now, but I'm going to kind of give a continuation of this. So, so let's focus on this case when our surface is given by the product of C and this curve C. And I'm going to claim there's sort of a canonical upgrade in this situation, which tells you that really, if you evaluate this Gayoto-Witten TFT on a closed curve, the fact that you know it's super conformal kind of means that this story I told you should work. And so it should really be valued in C star equivariant factorization algebras on C times C. And now this sort of work that, you know, I've talked about in other settings and I'm trying not to focus on right now, on my kind of work on equivariant localization, it in particular tells you that if you consider the inclusion of 0 into C and we pull back this factorization algebra along it, so for sort of on general grounds, this will always give you a factorization algebra on the curve. That operation was just my restriction to that locus, you know, as I explained here. But this deformation comes from the C star equivariant structure. So this, I could say C star equivariant factorization algebras here, but C star acts trivially. And so it's really just families of factorization algebras over the C star equivariant cohomology of the point. And that explains this kind of deformation. And it has the further property that really, if you look at the output here, it has the property that the associated graded of this guy with respect to the filtration that comes from this this family is commutative. So these guys come equipped, these sort of class S chiral algebras, or really in general, any of these 4D n equals 2 chiral algebras, come equipped with a canonical filtration that tells you kind of how to take their classical limit. So the so now let me just tell you. So now there's something that people define called the chiral Murtachikawa field theory, and this is what Arakawa constructed. And so what it assigns to a surface, I'm basically going to sort of explain today, it's more or less by definition just this thing that I told you. So it's just this kind of restriction of this Gayoto-Witten TFT, whatever it would have assigned. And now there's a further upgrade, which is the following. If you have a factorization algebra with a filtration and commutative associated graded, in particular, you can take this commutative factorization algebra, and you can just take its fiber over a point, and that just gives you some scheme. And that construction is called the associated variety, so that it's usually denoted x sub something. So you can construct the associated variety of this thing, and this is what Moore and Tachikawa defined. And so what people now call the Murtachikawa variety. So this.
I'm confused about connection with Arakawa, because Arakawa actually did something for surfaces with the boundary, right, with punctures.
Well, they have marked points.
So what's the role of marked points?
Yeah, so that's a great point. So the construction of Arakawa actually does not directly come from something like this. In a way, it sort of only axiomatizes the kind of TFT structure that arises from the fact that these surfaces are allowed to be decorated and that there's a kind of gluing construction along marked points.
But is there a statement that you can describe some four-dimensional theory associated with the surface with
punctures?
With punctures?
I am not claiming a mathematical statement, but certainly, I kind of claim that here, that you could reduce the 6D theory along a surface with punctures, and you would find a 4D n equals 2 class S theory. So I'm not claiming.
When you do this with punctures, how?
Oh.
What kind of role do they play?
So what they really do is localized at localized at these punctures, but wrapping the entire rest of the spacetime are certain codimension 2 defects in the 6D theory, which are labeled by like principal nilpotents for this Lie algebra G, and they kind of affect the resulting 4D n equals 2 theory. So today I'm not going to construct anything on this top board, but what I'm going to explain is that the sort of results of this idea can be carried out in this bottom board kind of fully mathematically. I'm going to explain how to go from sort of 4D n equals 4 theories with a bunch of boundary conditions, interfaces, and junctions, and produce chiral algebras. And they kind of manifestly can be computed sort of in either direction. And they recover this Arakawa construction. They recover some line operator mumbo jumbo. We'll get there.
So you recover the Arakawa construction only when you have no punctures?
No. For the full thing. Okay. So let's see. Are there any questions at this point?
You said it could be, but it's not familiar with what. How is this associated with variety time?
So let me just say a commutative factorization algebra is equivalent to something called a D scheme, which is a scheme over X with a flat connection. But in particular, you can just take the fiber of this scheme if you want. And that's some variety. And so if you have a kind of factorization algebra with a filtration.
That's not what it's
defined. It's not, but let me say, so if you have a factorization algebra with a filtration such that it's associated graded as commutative, then you get a D scheme and blah, blah, blah. And then there's this kind of standard construction. The usual way it's defined is the following. So there's a standard construction that says if you have a weakly kind of affine invariant factorization algebra on A1. So if you had just a translation invariant one, it would give you a vertex algebra. The extra GM equivariance gives a kind of grading. And if you have that structure, there's a kind of canonical way, which, you know, people just write all these vertex algebra formulas to build a filtration that has this property, and then you pass to the associated grid with respect to that, and that's your guy.
No, but it's right. And then I have to make it much smaller.
Think five.
Sorry.
This associated grid has no reasonable definition.
No, you're right that I'm getting something too big. You're right, but no. Hear me out. So if you have a D scheme, I forgot one step. If you have a D scheme over X, it has a flat section scheme, which is just a scheme over X, and kind of generalizes like the Durham cohomology functor, and just in this nonlinear setting, and it's the fiber of the flat section scheme. So then, if you have something like jets into a variety, its flat section scheme sort of just looks like the trivial family of those varieties over your base, and then you take the fiber and it gives you the thing you want. Like your construction, the thing you want is like that if you take the associated variety of kind of jets into, you know, Y, this is Y and it has this property. That's the thing you're supposed to do, sorry. But I want to emphasize a point, which I think I learned this from talking with Chris Beam, but it's really important that you don't use the kind of stupid filtration that's defined in all the canonical situations, but that you use the filtration that comes from this equivariant structure. That's kind of an important point if you want to get the right answer. Okay, so, great, when did I start? Like half an hour, great. So what do I want to explain to you now? I want to explain to you, given a 4DN equals 4 theory, with a bunch of junctions, interfaces, boundary conditions, junctions between them, I want to tell you how to produce a chiral algebra. So the construction is going to be of a very kind of topological field theory flavor. And so I'm just going to review some kind of basic constructions in TFT. And from like a very down-to-earth perspective, I'm not good at kind of higher categorical TFT stuff. I'm just going to kind of try to explain some simple things about. It will become clear, yeah. So a 2D TFT is given by, this is sort of due to Kevin, I guess, given by a Calabi-Yau category. And what that means, essentially, is that you just have a kind of trace pairing from the endomorphisms of any object to your base field. I'm not going to worry about the cohomological degree shifts because I'm not going to work at this category level anyway. But in particular, if you have kind of Hom AB, tensor Hom BA, you know, it maps to endomorphisms with respect to C of A, or kind of equivalently with B. And you want the compositions here. They're sort of all coherent and agree, all the different ways you could possibly write this. And it induces a non-degenerate pairing here. That's the Calabi-Yau condition. So I want to tell you a way of thinking about this. So a different way you could think about this is the following, that if you have a manifold with boundaries, so here I'm just going to draw a disk, and it's even allowed to have corners. So I'm going to put these points are supposed to indicate corners of this manifold with corners. If you label the boundary components by objects of your category, your C is kind of the 2D TFT, and you label the corners by Homs, then you can assign to this picture a number, which I'll call sort of Z of, I'm going to draw this manifold with corners as a cartoon box here. This should give you a number, basically using this structure. And this number can be sort of manifestly computed in a couple of different ways. So one way, well, let me just enrich the situation to try to, I'm just going to add some extra objects. So I'm going to have A, B, C, and D as my labels. And then I'm going to have these junctions, which are going to be labeled F, G, H, and I. And so one thing I can do is I can think of this as giving, so F is like a Hom from C to Hom AB, because it's literally an element of Hom AB. Similarly, H is an element of the dual of Hom from D to C, because it's in Hom from C to D, so it maps to C. And the data of G and I give a map between these Hom spaces. It's not too hard to see. And so this composition is a map from C to C, and it gives you a number. I could have equivalently, though, computed the exact same thing here in terms of, you know, Hom from B to C and Hom from A to D or whatever, you know, there's D to A. So there are kind of manifestly all these different ways, which you should think of as kind of compactifying in different orders for producing this number from this labeled manifold with corners.
So why is it this way? Why can't you just say go start with one of the objects, say A, and just go around to get on from A to A?
And then take the trace. Yeah, that was sort of the first definition. But I kind of wanted to emphasize this perspective because it's going to become our kind of different orders of compactification when we go a couple levels up and introduce some factorization and blah, blah, blah. But I just wanted to kind of explain this at the simplest possible level, where here it sort of seems, oh, yeah, it's trivial, but somehow like you might not have guessed that the, you know, 3DN equals 4 class S procedure sort of like vertex algebra procedure matched Arakawa's construction. But that's really going to be an instance of like this statement in some kind of very fancy context. OK, great. So next, I'm going to just sort of feel out what this structure looks like on other category levels. So if we had a 3D TFT that was described by a 2 category, so we had a 3D TFT. This really didn't erase very well. Can you guys see this at all?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. By then, of course, you know, you could say all the same things, but you'd be getting like Hom's vect to vect instead of C to C. And sort of ZC of this box would give a vector space. Similarly, if you had a 4D TFT described by a 3 category, then ZC of the box would now be a category. Sorry, described by 3 category for DTFT. And this category, the way you should interpret it, is you took your 4D theory, you reduced it on this manifold with corners with its appropriate labeling, and you produce the category of boundary conditions for the resulting two-dimensional field theory. In particular, if what you really wanted to know about was just the algebra of local operators of this 2D field theory, what you would do is further, you would take this 2D TFT and you would reduce it on S1. And in general, this procedure gives sort of an, if you reduce on SK minus 1, it gives you an EK algebra object in whatever you would have ended up in anyway. So in this case, I'm going to get an E2 algebra in vector spaces. And this E2 algebra is the sort of thing we're interested in computing, at least in this more chiral context, of the sort of 4D theory first reduced on this manifold with corners and then. OK, great. So this is sort of our goal. But I want to sort of emphasize that there's a different perspective on doing this calculation, which in particular, you don't need to be able to compute the full category of boundary conditions of the resulting 2D field theory just to compute this E2 algebra.
Sorry, can you repeat it again? So what is the symbol Z C tilde of S1?
So C tilde is a usual category. So it defines a 2D TFT. If I evaluate it on a one manifold, a closed one manifold, I should get a vector space. But there's a special property of spheres that when you evaluate TFTs on them, you actually get EK algebra objects in whatever.
So you're saying that CTL is not just a category, but it's called BL. So you say it defines you.
I mean, sort of, if we were in the TFT setting, you know, this was a fully dualizable three category, and in particular, this guy is still dualizable, and yeah.
Yeah, and not just the dualizability, it's the orientation structure.
So Calabi-Yau categories, indeed, they come with a trivialization of the Sayre functor, which is basically what this data is, and that's the orientability data. Thanks. Okay, so alternatively, we could have started with this three category, and we could have actually just evaluated it on S1. And this corresponds, so I was saying this is some kind of general property, so this would produce an E2 algebra object in two categories. And morally, you should think that this is the category of surface defects in this 4D TFT. And now, so let me call this D for defects. Now, if you have a bunch of, so if we had now a bunch of objects in HOMS, then we know that for the same reason, we could reduce on this square, and it should produce, remember, if we had a two category, it produced a vector space. So it produces a vector space. That's definitely true. But if the labeling is all E2 monoidal, so you really have a bunch of E2 algebra objects in this two category and HOMS between them that respect this E2 structure, then this really gives you an E2 algebra. And moreover, let me give an example, so-called example. So if you have objects of your original category and HOMS between them, again, in your original category, these naturally induce some E2 monoidal objects in the reduced category. And if you do a calculation purely built out of these things, then it makes sense to parse it in kind of either order. And manifestly, you would get the same answer. So ZD of the box would match the ZC tilde of S1. And there's some kind of like. Yes, so they actually come from more or less the same procedure. What you do is you take a ball and you label the boundary with this guy. So morally, what you should think is like, imagine in a 3D TFT, you have a boundary condition. You can kind of like wrap it over on itself and form this like long semi-tube, and it gives you a line operator in that 3D TFT. Or you could like kind of wrap it up and make it like just a little ball, and it would give you like a kind of point-like operator. Those are the kind of things that this does. So now, really, like this whole perspective on kind of labeled manifolds with corners is this sort of Ayala-Francis style factorization homology, sort of integrating over moduli spaces of stratifications. That's probably the right kind of mathematical framework. So I'm not going to do exactly this, but I want to produce a factorization algebra. So what I'm going to do is just follow this second procedure. But everywhere I have kind of E2 algebra object, I'm going to kind of say factorization algebra object. So it'll be more concrete in the kind of example. I better leave this up because this is what we're trying to do. So what we want to understand is that there should be some factorization two category. Again, I don't need to like make sense of this notion for the construction I'm proposing, but I think it's useful to kind of inform the intuition. Yeah, so I want to sort of do this whole story in the holomorphic direction, where the E2 is the holomorphic direction. And again, this corresponds to like, this is my topological, this is my holomorphic. I'm going to reduce on this labeled guy, produce factorization algebra. So here, I'm going to borrow a lot from some kind of very well-developed mathematical technology. And like the main idea is that my relevant guy, which I'll call sort of a, well, I'll just say what it is, C, is going to be the category of kind of, let me say, categories, so the two category of categories together with a g of k action at some level c. I'm not going to define this precisely, and at this point in the talk, things are going to start kind of diverging, where if you weren't familiar with this kind of language, you know, this might all just kind of make no sense. But so this is morally something like a factorization, because I can sort of vary this point. So if I reduced it on S1, it was supposed to be an E2 algebra in two categories.
Okay.
So now I'm.
This is D.
Ah, yes. Thank you. That's a great point. So D, my category of surface defects in this 4D holomorphic topological field theory. Thank you. Yes. So and now you know there's a lot of work has sort of gone into studying this kind of thing in the like kind of keywords or sort of local Langlands. Let me just sort of local Langlands. And there's a lot of literature here. The kind of obvious names to mention are probably Gates-Gurry. I mean, many predecessors, but the kind of technology I'm using here due to him. And I'm actually going to sort of rely also on a lot of the foundational work of Sam Raskin, especially for this kind of factorization category business. So the procedure I'm going to outline, before I can really outline the procedure, let me just tell you some objects. Let me give you some examples.
So this C of your office parameter for your topological field, for your original topological field, so that was 4D C of T, and this 4D C of T depends
on a parameter C, yeah. And as it happens, actually, for the particular application of class S chiral algebras, hopefully I'll have time to discuss the sort of potential generalization. But for this particular application, I'm going to start on, of course, there's always two sides of Langlands, but I'm going to start at critical level. That turns out to sort of be the right thing for my story here. So let me just give you some examples of objects. I'm going to kind of introduce some names. So D for Dirichlet is twisted D modules on G of K itself. Another object U, which somehow plays the role of like the factorization unit, is given by twisted D modules on the Grassmannian. Another important object N for Neumann is given by G hat modules at level C. And finally, there's an object which, I mean, I don't know if I'll get to use it, but called Whitaker, which, let me write it this way, it's the same object D, and I'm going to take the N of K psi co-invariance, but let me not say too much about that. I think there's just two.
Well, I mean, there's a D which is like curly D's, but
where's the third one?
Well,
oh, curly D? Or?
Oh,
well, curly D is curly. Yeah.
You need to go gothic.
To go gothic. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, somehow, I think it should never be ambiguous. But, you know, if you just check the category level, like, anyway. So I just want to list some properties, which is that these, I want to tell you all the functors that these guys co-represent, sort of morally, like if you kind of formally dualize them. So this co-represents the forgetful functor. This co-represents the G of O invariance. This co-represents the weak G of K invariance, and this co-represents N of K psi invariance. Okay, so keep that in mind, whatever. So you know, now the point is I'm gonna posit the data as being a bunch of, so these are all factorization categories with a kind of compatible action of G of K, and then I'm gonna tell you some factorization functors between them, and then I'm supposed to be able to collapse this whole category or this whole picture and produce a factorization algebra, sort of following that logic. And maybe it's sort of worth pointing out, so Justin Hilburn and Phil Sang-Yu, and as well, I guess there's some work of Davide and Phil, which are supposed to kind of provide, there are these kind of papers in progress, which provide the kind of dictionary which I use to kind of do the following construction. And I should admit that, you know, if I didn't kind of learn this dictionary from these people, then I wouldn't have been able to do this. So this is sort of really, these were crucial inputs to what I'm doing. Okay, so let's do an example. Let me just try to do the most basic example. What's happening here? And I'm going to start with P1 with two punctures, or two, not punctures, two of these marked points, and I'm going to mark them with kind of principal nilpotents. So from this kind of description I gave up here, you should expect this to give rise to a picture as follows. So we have the kind of surface defect category in the middle, and then there's a kind of calculus based on this sort of work of Gayoto-Witten of boundary conditions in 4D n equals 4, where you can figure out kind of what boundary conditions you get. So this picture here, sorry, is now different. This is a picture of P1 with two marked points. So sigma D equals P1 with. Yeah, right, for the current construction.
And now, what do you want to compute?
I want to compute the sort of chiral Moore Tachikawa guy. So I want to compute, where'd it go? Over here, right. I want to compute a factorization algebra. I want to compute this. A factorization algebra on my curve, which has been suppressed from all the pictures. And it's really going to have some filtration, but I'm not going to talk about that. But I'm going to compute a factorization algebra. And you know, the point is, remember here, we have a two category. So if we correctly label a square, we should get a vector space. And everything's factorization compatible. So really, that vector space is a factorization algebra. It's the kind of fiber, which is the vertex algebra. That's what I'm going to compute.
So I can explain mathematically what it means to insert these labels.
To insert these labels?
Yes.
So only insofar as the following thing, which I was just in the process of saying, which is there's this work of Gayoto and Witten that tells you in the presence of various surface defects or not, if you reduce the 6D theory, kind of what types of boundary conditions you should get. And so it's really going to affect, like, these labels, you're going to sort of start to get a feeling for it when I do a few calculations. These labels are really giving you these labels on these two ends. These are corresponding to these. Okay. So the fact that there are punctures at both of these tells me that I should put Dirichlet as the resulting boundary condition here. And reducing in the omega background gives a Neumann boundary condition at the tip of the cigar. And maybe one of my few sort of really it's not really that big an insight, but is that you should just complete pictures like this always by adding a unit kind of at infinity. It's not at infinity, but kind of in the picture sort of at infinity, you should always just put the unit. That's the right thing to do. So what kind of thing is this going to give you? What should you expect? Remember, I had this kind of different compactification orders picture. So one way you could parse this diagram, let me go down first, is you could parse it as giving factorization functors from the unit sort of factorization category, I'll call it vect, to HOM from U to N, which is precisely the Kajdan-Lustig category, to vect. And the factorization functors, vect to vect, are the same thing as factorization algebras. So my goal is to get a factorization algebra. And the claim in this case is that I should get the chiral differential operators to G at level C. Sorry?
This is the answer to
what factorization algebra is associated to this data, which I haven't fully specified yet, of a bunch of boundary conditions and a bunch of HOMs between them, i.e. factorization categories with G of K action and G of K equivariant factorization functors between them. So I assign that data to a picture like this. I'll do an explicit calculation on the next board. And from this, I'm supposed to get a factorization algebra, which is computed sort of manifestly in a couple of different ways. If I compute it this way, I get, using this forgetful functor property, I get just D modules on G of K and functors to and from vect. And so now I want to point out, I've given a bunch of talks about how to think about, you know, 3D and 2D systems in terms of factorization categories and factorization functors. So the point is, these are precisely the line operator categories of the Chern-Simons and relevant 3D n equals 4 theory in this particular case. And these are the kind of induced boundary conditions for those guys. Let me point out, we got really lucky here. It just so happens that the Moore-Tachikawa variety for the two-punctured sphere is very simple. It's T star G. And as a result, its line operator category for the 3D n equals 4 theory, we can describe explicitly as just D modules on loops into G. And the that really makes the calculation in this particular case very explicit. In general, this side would sort of be harder to compute. And maybe you could say sort of the insight of Arakawa is that by compactifying in this direction instead, you get some kind of more tractable calculations. OK, great. So now I'm going to explain how this calculation really goes in this example. I'll just give you all the data and write it out, and we'll see the sort of relevant thing. What should I erase? Maybe I'll. So there is that. There is also a property that if you have. So here, the rhetoric is that the boundary condition that is induced.
Boundary condition, which dimension of line operator?
Yeah, there's sort of a lot of different potential connections.
Okay. Well,
but the particular one I'm using here is that this 4D boundary condition together with these two Halms is inducing a kind of boundary condition for this 3D theory, which in particular, from lines kind of ending on it, gives a factorization functor from the category of 3D lines to vect, the category of lines in the kind of trivial 3D theory. So this is a factorization functor. Like again, there's a kind of curve secretly fibered over this whole picture. There's some kind of lines, they end on it, and they go into kind of nothing, and this functor is. Okay. So this particular one, yeah. So this is the forgetful functor for me, which, you know, if I have a module, I can just forget. But there is a sense in which it does correspond to the vacuum module, but it's a little bit subtle.
So this factorization algebra is just, if I fail to visualize it, is sort of all possible modules, one modules for Kasmoody together with the way they fuse and.
This factorization algebra along here.
Yes.
Yes, insofar as you can parse it as such. From my perspective, I would say if you were able to dualize this functor, you would get a factorization algebra internal to the category of line operators. And only sort of after choosing a functor out can you parse it as just a standalone factorization algebra. But there is a kind of canonical, just forgetful functor on KL.
Directions of arrows here.
Okay. What's that?
There are matters of directions of arrows.
Yeah.
Which was for C, not rational. For C rational, like here, are probably quite important.
Yeah. There's some subtleties. Basically, all the dualizability data for this kind of factorization two category guy, it really plays an essential role. And like a ton of the interesting structure that gives the kind of non-trivial factorization algebras really come from these duality pairings.
Like this differential, this DG chiral, right, is not just an extension of the polynomial to critical level Kasmukis, right? It's more complicated.
It's, yeah, yeah, it, yeah, definitely. I mean, well, it's, well, it depends what you mean by extension. It is sort of like a direct sum of, you know, tensor products of these Weyl modules or whatever. Right. I mean. For C equal to zero for you is critical.
Yes, okay. I shall not.
What
is the question? So the standard differential operator is kind of an extension of one of Kasmukis.
Yes.
For level CMRC.
Yes.
Is this true, speaking only for non-rational C, or is it?
I think it depends on moral rules.
Okay, there is no subtlety of the
rational. No,
answer.
I don't.
Okay.
I think it's an honest.
Okay, so I'm going to draw this fully labeled surface guy here. And how do I want to label it for this calculation? I want to put Dirichlet, U, Dirichlet, and N. So I just kind of like turned it around a little bit. Did I even turn it around? Yeah, I did slightly. Is this the calculation I want to do first? Yeah, great. So, and now I have to tell you sort of these Homs here, at these some kind of G of K equivariant Homs. That's the full data that specifies this diagram. But let me just note, because D co-represents forgetful, I can also just tell you the Homs down here in this particular case. But
to explain how you get this picture from your puncture, from your
my punctured sphere. Yeah, I did. You may have sort of missed it, but it kind of came, there was a board that was sort of geometrically above this one that kind of came from reducing from 6D and. So we're going to find, I'm just for the sake of time, I'll just sort of write everything, just sort of tell you the answer. So what are the categories we find here? D modules on the Grassmannian. We find D modules on G of K. We find G hat mod. So I'm going to tell you what these guys are. So the initial functor from Vect is just going to be pushed forward along the inclusion of sort of the, you know, unique point in the affine Grassmannian, and sort of the vertex algebra you should be thinking of is, well let me not say that. This is sort of gives you the object that's the image of C is like the delta function D module at the kind of point. Here, I'm going to take the map pi from G of K down to the Grassmannian, and I'm going to D-module pullback along it. So the result after doing this, these two operations by base change, the kind of functor going to here, is going to be the inclusion of G of O, D-module push forward, the dualizing sheaf on G of O. The functor from G of K to G hat modules, you can probably guess, is the localization functor given by the O sections, and the functor from G hat mod to Vect.
So what do you mean by localization functor?
I just mean take sections as an O module, but I mean in the sense of like Balanced and Bernstein localization. But this is, you know, it's not on the flag variety, but it's on G of K. Yeah.
So you say sections
on G of K. Sections, O
sections. So in other words, you think about this as a module solver, but that one has two GFs.
That is indeed true, but from this particular presentation, that isn't present. Indeed, you know that the answer. Which one in this? This.
Well, especially if you're in. Is it important? Is your C arbitrary now?
It's critical.
So then it has two actions on the critical level.
It does, yeah, that's right. And it's just picked, one of them is picked out here. It's like either left or right. Probably it's not chosen. Later, there'll be another picture that is kind of more symmetric in these two actions in a second. So in particular, you know, we find the answer we want. And sort of a well-known fact, if you like, it's kind of the definition of chiral differential operators. Maybe I need g to be like, let's say, affine or something, just to make this simple. But this is sections, O sections, over g of k of the inclusion of g of O push forward of the dualizing sheaf. So that's the kind of fundamental type of calculation that occurs in this kind of business. So let me explain. Shoot, OK. I don't want to go too much over. I really wanted to. I always give such long talks here. I really wanted to try to give a short talk this time. Let me just advertise a few more kind of similar calculations, and then we'll call it a day. So this was the kind of, I want to emphasize, this was the kind of 3D n equals 4 perspective. This was the line operator category of 3D n equals 4. And this was kind of, if you knew the Higgs branch of a 3D n equals 4 theory, this is what you would always do to produce the vertex algebra. Correct. You would just take CDOs to this Higgs branch. This is the, this is a reduce on a circle. I reduce equivariantly on a circle. It's the A-twisted 3D n equals 4 theory with Higgs branch T star G. With line operator category, kind of D of G of K, and you know, and there's a lot of things to say. If you took, you know, the endomorphism algebra of this guy, which happens to be the factorization unit here, you'd get an E1 factorization algebra, which is your kind of BFN construction in this example.
And so do you have like a separate sphere, not two markings, two labels, but many labels, so you have a recipe, so what you will have instead of the square?
Yeah. I mean, I've got to keep going here, but yeah. I know I claim I can do all of them. I can do all of them. Right. So we did kind of this side. And now I just want to kind of explain a few properties of kind of doing things this way. So from doing things this way, I'll just kind of draw it quickly for simplicity. Again, what do I have? D, N, U, what we find is vect going to KL at level C going to vect. And it turns out that this functor is just the CDOs. And this functor is just forget, so it's not a very interesting construction. But I want to point out that there's a move you can do, which is really important, which is that you can fold pictures like this. So there's an equivalent version of this where I fold this picture in half. Now I have sort of two 4D n equals 4 theories here. So I have C tensor C dual as my label in the internal. There's a co-evaluation map, which defines a boundary condition for C tensor C dual. I have U tensor squared, D tensor squared, N tensor squared. And I similarly could have kind of done it the other way, of course. And what this is going to give is so these happen to be the same here, but this co-evaluation, maybe I should have done it the other way first, but I'll just claim it's actually given by CDOs. And this diagram I claim is sort of invariant or under sort of duality. It's clearly symmetric. In particular, like kind of the dual with respect to this notion of duality of chiral differential operators is forget. So then here I have forget tensor squared. And this just lands in vect. Or I could have had sort of the same thing here. I could have had two copies of chiral differential operators if I sort of bent it the other way. And then I would have applied the evaluation for the duality pairing, which is given by semi-infinite cohomology with respect to g of k. And I would have gotten, there's sort of a result of Arkhipov and Gaitskori from a long time ago that tells you that, you know, I mean, it basically tells you this is the co-evaluation for this pairing. And so in particular, if you have two of these guys, the composition is just chiral differential operators again. So you kind of recover this whole evaluation, co-evaluation structure here. Maybe I should mention, so there's a recent paper, kind of homological methods, in semi-infinite contexts. This is Raskin, and it kind of explains how you can construct these sort of duality pairings on sort of sections of G of K categories in this kind of setting. Okay, great. So I better just try to do some more examples so you can get a flavor for what's going on. So let me now just have one puncture. Let's see what happens. So which side do I want to put it on first? Let me start by putting it here. So there's no puncture here now. This is my P1. And now this is the point you were asking about. So now the fact that I don't have a puncture here, it tells you if you reduce on a cigar tip from 6D, the result of Gayota-Witten is that you get a non-pole or Whitaker type boundary condition. So I now find Whitaker here, find N and D as before, and the unit at infinity. I should stop saying at infinity. The unit. Let's say for now it's an axiom. Yeah, that's right. So
you can check it. It's like gluing, like that. You can check if the axiom satisfies gluing, and then you glue the same surfaces together.
Yeah. So this first half of the picture we've already parsed.
More than the gluing is basically
the model function. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So this half of the diagram we've already parsed exactly as before, and we know that we get the CDOs to G in KLC. And now there's a kind of theorem. Again, this is due to Raskin, called sort of affine Scriabin. I don't know quite how to say that name, but it tells you sort of ultimately that this kind of, if you compose certain, you know, natural palms that label these guys in a setting like this, I'll just state the resulting functor is given by Drinfeld-Sokolov reduction at a principle F from the KL category to. So the result, the composition, is what Arakawa defines as the equivariant W algebra, C, which is this Drinfeld-Sokolov reduction, chiral differential operators. And again, there are sort of two pictures you can draw using evaluation and co-evaluation, which sort of says, well, this is also given by, you know, vect co-evaluation to KL tensor squared, which is just d chiral differential operators to G. And then you could just do, you know, one Drinfeld-Sokolov and one forget. So this is the kind of more manifestly symmetric picture to vect. And this sort of obviously gives the same thing. And then whatever. There's some different parsings you could have done. OK, great. Oh, and of course, if I flipped it the other way, I would get vect. I know here that, I'm just going to flip actually this picture around. We know that chiral differential operators was dual to just the forgetful functor here, dual in this sense. And here we just have to find this WGCF. All right, I'm just going to go to the end. Sorry, guys. But I think we're going to get kicked out of here in 5 minutes, so you'll be free soon. What's that? So from what I've said already, you can now easily deduce that if you have no punctures, you can describe this.
More punctures, not less.
You want more? OK. I'll just finish my sentence, but that's fine. Somehow the point is, like, the observation, which somehow boils down to your work and which Arakawa uses, it doesn't end up being, like, it seems daunting to construct the higher point ones, but it just turns out that these kind of evaluation and co-evaluation pairings, in a way, you can kind of just get it for free. It's not really as kind of clever as you thought it was going to be or something. It's not hard. I should really talk about, like, the kind of toric examples, or, like, that's the interesting stuff. I mean, the point is that the only sort of manageable way I'll be able to parse it will just give the example that maybe you, or give the construction that you maybe already know from Arakawa. But I could say something in a second. Right. So. Things are definitely, things are defined. So let me point out, like, this picture, if I lifted it to the sphere, how would these pictures look? They're just doing what is demanded now. This corresponded to sort of this sphere, like this, but this picture corresponded to just redrawing it like this. Somehow you reduce on two copies of the circle, so you get two copies of geometric, the 4DN equals 4, you have, you know, two of these boundary conditions here, and the point is that this co-evaluation is kind of naturally you assign to this puncture disk here. And there's nothing kind of, at the end of the day, at the level of sort of, at the level of these categories, these evaluation and co-evaluations, they just come from this very general fact that if you have sort of C, this sheaves of categories, or some space Y, then there's this kind of canonical pairing. You know, if there was no twisting so that this was really true, then there's this kind of canonical pairing, which is just given by sections over Y of the tensor product Q comma Y. But there's nothing like, and the kind of co-evaluation from sort of dualizing it and so on, but there's nothing kind of wholly about taking a tensor product of kind of two things here. That's like the kind of fundamental underlying observation you could just, and that corresponds to this sort of, you know, I could have drawn my three punctures.
Who's Y here?
So Y is B G of K de Rom insofar as you can make sense of it. And there's a subtlety because there's twisting. So if there was no twisting, then this is true. There's a subtlety which it's kind of the fundamental reason why you get these duality pairings.
That if C can represent in this way, then you're saying that we can take the product of the C over Y many times, and then what? Then what is the statement?
So I claimed here I constructed the evaluation functor for a duality pairing on this two category.
Okay.
So sort of from basically just from dualizing it in kind of the usual way. There's a co-evaluation pairing as well. And then what I was pointing out is that I could just extend this to C tensor cubed in this totally trivial way. And that corresponds to this sort of simple thing of just kind of drawing the diagram like in this way. In exactly the same way that I kind of did this calculation in these terms. When I drew the sphere like this, in terms of the 2-to-0 pairing, I can kind of do the same thing using this 3-to-3 pairing here. Now, like, this is like really hard math, sort of making sense of statements like this and showing that they actually induce the duality pairings on the Hom categories that you expect. Like, starting with, you know, sheaves of categories of BG of K to ROM, like, first of all, I mean, maybe that's not even well-defined to begin with, but even supposing it was, you have to kind of think pretty hard about, like, what does something like this, like, how do you get the, you know, for example, the semi-infinite cohomology pairing, which is the pairing for the evaluation on the duality for G-hat modules, like, how does that arise from this kind of geometry? That's, you know, that's something, especially if you want it to be totally rigorous in the, you know, kind of co-complete DG category framework, those are like things that are being proved in like papers like this, and not something that I can prove, admittedly. But the kind of idea I claim is pretty clear, and that's the reason. I mean, you know that these constructions are out there and people can just do them, and it's not so hard in the end. And this is somehow fundamentally the reason I claim.
So the thing is built as sort of going from vect to path and loop stick to the end to vect.
Vect to Kasdan loop stick to the end to vect. Yeah, precisely. And that the fact that the last functor, say you always have punctures, that last functor from KL tensor to the n to vect is always just the nth tensor power of the forgetful functor. And that's the reason why, like in the Moore-Tachikawa sort of statement of the TFT structure, you always, like the TFT is valued in sort of, you know, vertex algebras that have this Kasdan, this affine algebra symmetry, the affine Lie algebra symmetry. That's the reason the I'm not.
So
the whole question is kind of describe this
Evaluation and co-evaluation. Yeah.
You're saying that the evaluation is just forgetful
puncture. No, I'm not. I'm saying the punctures when they were outgoing correspond to the forgetful functor. And I was just making the observation that that's the reason, the fact that all of these factorization algebras that I construct for n punctures factor through the forgetful functor from KL tensor to the n. That's the reason if you just didn't apply this forgetful functor, you could say instead it was a TFT valued in, you know, KL tensor to the n mod. But KL to some power. Yeah, that's right. But I mean, but the answer is, like, you know that the output is forget, so you know the answer. The answer is the thing we're trying to construct. Sort of by definition, it's this.
Right. Physically, this sort of blob to the left, from the point of view of 4D, Amir's. Like, it's a boundary condition where the gauge group is reduced to the diagonal gauge groups.
Right. So somehow here, you know, like what is tensor over Q co y? A different way you could write it is sort of like, you know, take the exterior product and pull back along the diagonal. Mm-hmm. And that's what's responsible for these, you know, these formulas where you compute cohomology of some Schreck tensor product of a bunch of D modules on the affine Grassmannian. Like somehow it's really just coming from that once you parse everything through. Seems like we're not going to get kicked out. I can go on forever. No.
Yeah, I guess the room was reserved, but maybe
they didn't. All right. I'm actually going to say one more thing, and then maybe we'll let people leave, and people who want to ask questions can ask questions. But
if you want to give the quantum.
Well, this is going to be kind of string theory, so I mean, no. So there's this idea. There's this very nice paper. I don't know if I'm going to remember how to write the various like checks like that. I'm really getting myself into trouble here. I shouldn't have tried. I'll just erase this. Yeah. So.
What are the every level?
So the functor from Kasdan-Lustig to the n to vect, the one of that involves sort of parallel algebra, right? Yes, so there was chiral, not topologic. But is the first functor one from vector to Kasdan-Lustig cube topological, or is also chiral? Because I was wrong when I said it, that this is the standard sum of.
So the way I would parse that question is basically to say, so this defines a factorization algebra object in this factorization category. And in order to talk about an underlying factorization algebra, I would forget. So I would just produce the actual thing. And then the way I would interpret the question is just asking, like, is this factorization algebra sort of really an E2 algebra or something? Is it, you know, in some sense?
If you forget, surely not, right? Because it could be as I'm just asking movies depending on that. But my question was, the first step, is it introducing chirological stuff? Or is it topological?
It's, I mean, it manifestly, it's definitely introducing chiral algebra stuff because it has all the right. interesting data. It is the thing, right? This functor is the Mura-Tachikawa, the chiral, this is like, you know, the chiral Mura-Tachikawa functor defined by Arakawa. It's this. But I think maybe the thing you're getting at is that this functor implicitly depended on a choice of surface here, and you might ask, like, does it depend topologically on sigma? And that I'm claiming. Oh, no. Okay. Really here. Yeah, so I would say then maybe my rough answer is like sort of.
That's fine.
So.
And I was like, I'm stupid based on why is it from the kind of physics perspective, kind of field theory perspective? Why is it important that really moving some Greek below? Because everything is
fine
now, it's magically making sense only for Greek below, right? So why was it important from here?
So it's because the resulting twist of 4D n equals 4 that you're in
yes.
is this kind of the critical level. There's a correspondence between levels and twists. And
yes.
so one thing that will be explained in this sort of physics paper, like many of these physics ideas will be explained in this kind of physics paper I'm going to write and am writing. and one of the things is that you can really trace the relevant twists through all of the gauge theories. Of course, at the level of 6D, you don't quite know what's going on, but at the level of all of the other gauge theories, you can really write some kind of explicit, if you like C infinity D schemes, just describing the differential equations in these twisted field theories. And so in that picture, in 6D, I started in the more or less unique holomorphic topological twist of six-dimensional 2-0, and I reduced on two circles to get 4D n equals 4, and one of those circles I reduced equivariantly, but not the other.
So you're saying that this equivariance makes sense only because of the Greek below?
Those two circles, in fact, you could have reduced equivariantly on either circle in the totally general case. Not if you had a curve, but if you say had like R2 times R2 times the curve C, and then the ratio of the equivariant parameters for those two rotations is what determines the relevant twist of 4D n equals 4. Probably due to Debbie.
This co-evaluation object here for general n does not exist for general n.
No, right. I mean, as much as I understand this,
because you make those three samples equivariant, then it does sigma you can put in there.
That's a great way of thinking about it. Yeah. Excellent.
If you kind of did that sample, the sample is talking about those things that he's going there.
So the potential deformation of the level would come from turning on an additional equivariance along these circles. And if you tried to do that, that's a great observation. That's yeah. If you try to do that, you would need to produce from TFT reasoning a co-evaluation functor. You would need to have a C star equivariant surface bounding these three circles. Or S1 equivariant surface, and that's the thing that you can't produce. Great. So one thing that I didn't explain the role of, unfortunately, I totally forgot, and it was like supposed to come much earlier, is S-duality. So at the very beginning of the story, I chose to first reduce on the Riemann surface and then reduce on the Segarra circle. But if I'd switched those orders, it would have given a totally different construction of everything, but after reducing on both circles, I would be back to 4D n equals 4 and a very similar picture, but having exchanged the roles of those circles would apply basically local Langlands to these diagrams. And the point is, it's a sort of, if you like, I mean, let me sort of state some probably already known kind of properties of the local Langlands equivalence. it should sort of leave the vertex algebras that are computed in this way, it should leave them invariant. So if you compute on either side, you should get the same answer. That's sort of just.
You already use local lambda, right? When you said C is the shift.
No, it's not. He said that the Y was something like
sheaves of BG of K-drum. Yeah. I think this point will become evident if I go on. So go to rep check, explain this following thing. So in general, if you have let's fix X, a toric Calabi-Yau threefold. So there's a kind of toric diagram calculus for these guys, which says that you can basically draw. The basic story is just their three-dimensional moment polytope always admits a kind of faithful projection onto a plane. And so you can just draw the edges of this moment polytope. And then open faces represent divisors, toric divisors. T2, toric divisor. And you could try to calculate, associate, like basically in a very similar way, after reducing on this, the sort of circles of this toric divisor, you should have a 4DN equals 4 theory on these faces. And you could do a similar kind of calculus where here you would get, say, Whitaker, here you would get Neumann, you put U at infinity, and you're supposed to be able to produce from pictures like this. Of course, you could also like put in other divisors. They could have different labels. It's a very rich story. You can produce some factorization algebras. So this particular one, it's not too hard to see from similar arguments to the one already presented. This produces the usual affine W algebra for principal element of G. And this kind of manifest equivalence under local Langlands tells you that, so here, these boundary conditions would actually get swapped. So in this case, it tells you this Fagan-Frankel isomorphism that this is WF principal at sort of C for G. So this structure is sort of really kind of apparent all the time. And now let me just tell you one new sort of thing that you can do. So before, you know, this was studied really well by Miro and Davide, but there was this kind of barrier that a lot of the arguments factored through just passing to the Chern-Simons. But from this more TFT perspective, there's totally nothing wrong with labeling a not necessarily like a toric diagram, which is not necessarily a tree. So something like this is totally a valid labeling. And these methods can just totally compute this vertex algebra. And what the result is there's a kind of semi-infinite cohomology type pairing on the Whitaker invariants of G hat mod. And it's just the diagonal semi-infinite cohomology of two copies of this W algebra, which just comes from kind of bending the picture sort of like this in the kind of TFT language. And so, sorry, what's that? So I'm just, and I'm choosing a divisor. And now, what I point out is that there is a, so what Gallardo and Davide and Miro explain is that in the same way that I deduced from my pictures like this, the boundary condition labels, to a general toric diagram of a CY3, there's some kind of labelings that you can do. And in general, they'll give not just sort of objects of the category, which are like functors from, I don't know what the right, let me say vect.
Labelings are in different dimensions, because before you labeled the components of one-dimensional boundary with your like,
so if you think about it, like I always could have had sort of something like C, D, and a bunch of objects of the relevant categories, and I could have labeled these like an object is just a functor from vect. So somehow secretly the empty category was always here, and I could have just labeled this by an honest functor, and the same kind of contraction procedure, as long as everything is sort of within the subcategory of sort of fully dualizable objects. these C and D guys, you can still kind of produce whatever objects you want from labeled manifolds with corners, being a kind of agnostic about the category level.
So it's still two-dimensional manifolds.
Yeah, that's right. A two-manifold with corners, but now there's allowed to be sort of some kind of, it's allowed to be sort of split along some lines, and you can label the faces differently. And sort of a toric divisor and a toric CY3 naturally gives rise to such a diagram, and that's what's explained in this paper.
Yeah, but I think I was supposed to get a vertex algebra.
And exactly. You're supposed to get a vertex algebra. These are the same vertex algebras which have been sort of studied by Gukov and collaborators, and they would call them sort of VOA of this toric divisor. They would want to call these things. But this really gives a mathematical construction of these guys, modulo sort of, you know, parsing the rules in this paper and kind of converting them into this local Langlands setup and making sense of all the computations I'm doing. But here I'm just giving the first non-trivial example of something people just couldn't compute before that I can compute with this formalism. And the kind of, there's some concrete conjectures, like if I could really compute the vector space underlying this, the kind of concrete conjecture is which I'll, let me call it a sort of theorem in progress or whatever, because I really think I can sort of do this, is that the character of these guys should match some kind of equivariant, some Vafo-Witten, but there's a way of talking about them in terms of kind of DT of this ambient CY3 invariance, a generating function. Function of covariant. So there's some concrete expectations, there's a procedure, I just need to kind of compute the vector spaces, compute the characters, try to match, and there are some papers that do these calculations in some concrete examples like P1 times P1, and I'm hoping I can just do it.
People have computed the vertex algebra before.
Right, yeah,
so
no.
Is gonna be the new...
That's the new thing, yeah, exactly, that's the point is.
But can you actually get your hands on the module and...
Yeah, so I mean, I gave a description here. I was sort of just saying what you should do is take two copies of the affine W algebra, and then there's a certain semi-infinite cohomology type evaluation pairing on this Whitaker invariance of G hat modules.
Okay, so the trivial is a trivial Zoroastrian central charge as up to 26. Hmm. And I guess you're putting ghosts, and then the usual gets the adaption. So you get only two Lagrangian somehow of four.
Well, the point is there are different ways you can parse the diagram. So like for me, the way I wanted to parse this diagram was squish it this way. So then I basically just have vect, and then I have two copies, both here and here, of the kind of Whitaker objects in G hat modules. And then what I want to do is I know from kind of this calculation what's going on at this corner. And what I want to do is there are two different ways I can fold it and use either the evaluation or co-evaluation pairing on this Whitaker objects and G hat modules, which that's been kind of computed, and it's a certain semi-infinite cohomology functor, the evaluation. And so I just kind of play the same game I was playing the whole time. But
maybe there are four corners which you could have found the Lagrangians. On the other hand, there was some.
So there's like a manifestly equivalent calculation where I could have kind of done it this way, right? Mm-hmm. And that will give like sort of a slightly different presentation. Maybe where you could kind of interpret like here, you know, the kind of manifest currents from those W algebras are sort of coming from these corners, whereas like in this picture they're kind of coming from these corners.
You can go from N W to W N without extra
W-N. Maybe the way I would try to say it like roughly physically is that the degrees of freedom that are living here are what are giving you, they're kind of coming together to give you the evaluation or co-evaluation pairing. So they are kind of gauging, like the degrees of freedom here are kind of gauging the degrees of freedom here somehow. And there are kind of different ways you can
But does the proposal satisfy as duality?
Maybe yeah, sort of manifestly it must. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, there's obviously like lots of work to do on the kind of pure math side, especially, and also on the kind of vertex algebra calculation side. So, you know, if anyone thinks they can help me or wants to do some cool calculations, like, I'd be happy to talk about all this stuff. I'll stop there. Yeah?
So in this example, we say W of G is for GB, you know, SLN, if I label square in the middle of N, is that what's going on?
Yeah, that's right.
So it's nothing to do with the fact that there's a pink diagonal for A1.
No, that is not showing up, not in sort of internal, like the computation that's arising here is precisely, I kind of used the fact that I know how to do this calculation. It's that same.
And so what, is this Hamming cohomology the same as like the DC ghosts?
So the correct pairings that show up here are sort of really in the, like kind of, this is like very recent work of people like Sam or Gurbir Dhillon. And I can't say that I'm like really, that I've thought through all the details and know exactly the right kind of pairing on this particular category. Ooh, right, so you have to be careful here, that's right. So when you bend these pictures, you're secretly replacing like one copy of the base category C with sort of the dual category, and that switches the level unless you're at this sort of central. So I think that, yeah, I think they have opposite levels here. I think that's right.
And I think in this case, if you look at the formula for the central charge, the true central charge is around 26. It's hard to imagine this is a coincidence, right? It's precisely the value that you could couple to BC ghosts.
Yeah.
Adaption.
And what you sorry, you mentioned that sort of was existing somewhere in the literature or something? You kind of
not exactly, but there is this thing called this weird critical strings or you know, that's sort of very simple string theories where you have a minimum model, you couple it to leave it to just a pure Virasoro essentially.
Take a minimal model, couple it to a pure mirror sort. You're doing the SL2 case.
Sort of a simple quotient other than the Virasoro.
Yeah, so the Virasoro minimal models, they're indexed by two integers, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And do you think that could correspond to like the...
So when C is a Q over Q, or...?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's kind of this issue where there are a lot of different angles that these lines can come out at, and they give slightly different, like modified versions of the relevant boundary conditions.
Like an analytic continuation of this, where you don't look at the model, you just leave both Virasoros as Virasoros. That's still the annihilation of matrix models, essentially.
To matrix models.
Yes. These are sort of the string theories which are dual to certain transmatrix models.
Dual in the sense of like, like these people at like Stanford and stuff study these kind of.
Older.
Yeah.
The history.
Oh, okay.
Before I was born. No.
This one is right, then the index is not hard to compute.
Yeah, I agree. It seems very kind of.
You know, you can use it more. It's a good card here. The B and C of charge minus 1 and 2. Mm-hmm.
You can just.
No, if I could, but most likely, I think you just did one. This is the two years old. That's exactly as the ghost. But that's not true. I mean, it's actually zero because it's what they call zero mode.
Well, yes, okay.
This isn't necessarily the most standard, like you might be thinking of affine G semi-infinite cohomology? Or no, you're
string theory. Owen and Frank.
Right.
This would be the holomorphic bosonic string.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is. You're coupling to holomorphic vector fields on C. That's where your BC goes slipping. It's like, so in their language, it's like the cotangent theory to the moduli space of real surfaces.
Yes. That's right.
And that's what, in your, this is just, you're saying this particular canonical thing is seems like what's coming out of this P1 times P1 example. Yes.
So that's like the semi-infinite cohomology piece is coupling to the cotangent theory of the cohomology of the surfaces, and you're coupling something, which is two copies of the Virasoro, which is the W omega.
But I think what's so far the interaction are analysis for dimension one side.
Yeah, I mean the BC cohomology has to get very, very small because L0 knowledge.
Yeah, so these things are out of the, for example, zero cohomology. I mean, typically just get those number one cohomology from C times the primary dimension one.
Yes.
I think these things have a downlink at the front of zero cohomology.
Well, that would just be the Gaussian number, that would just be kernel L0 as well.
Oh, I don't know why I remember it, but I think also there is a lot of cohomology, but it exists.
I think that the cohomology tends to really go fast. It becomes very small.
Yeah, I could try to. I mean, I found a paper that I think has this P1 times P1, the equivariant Vafa-Witten invariance for P1 times P1, or at least has some method of calculating it. I know sometimes there's a bit of nuance to like the right enumerative geometry setup to match physics or whatever, so I'm not 100% sure that's the thing, but we could like look at the formulas.
You could do the U1 case easier.
Right. Yeah, no, that's totally reasonable.
Because then you know what the VOA is.
I know the just goal, yeah, and I can just try to see. That's totally reasonable. I mean, for that matter, in general.
All right.
Okay.